just one game this week, the away draw at Gillingham. Pete says, another one to forget and take a point home, but we need to start upping the performances. Trevor Griffiths says it wasn't one for the purists, but a point away from home off a playoff-chasing team is fine. Kev O'Connell says we need to keep perspective. A draw at Gillingham isn't a bad result. H. Robinson says draw was a fair result and the second half was better than the first. Graham Miles agrees with this. The first half was very poor, the second was much better, and we tried to play more. If the keeper hadn't sat on Nevitt's shot, we would be travelling back happier. Ian Perry thought not losing was key, and with the conditions not helping, it was mission accomplished, although our mojo has dipped. Chris Mason agrees, the point is fine, it's the lack of momentum that is concerning him. Joe C would have taken a point before kickoff, but feels like it was too dropped. We Are Crew is concerned that we've lost our edge and confidence from earlier in the season. Captain Britton asks if anyone sees Crew showing promotion form at the moment, and Joe labelled it as depressing. Andy Griffiths thinks it's never mentioned, but if we have Powell, Tabernet and Offord in that midfield, we win that game and the majority. Adam Brazendale says 7 shots and 2 on target tells us everything we need to know. Even with the ball in the box, we don't know what to do with it. James Hanley wouldn't fear them in the playoffs and picks Rio out as too good for this level now. Grant calls Booth our best player today. Neil Hulse thought Booth and Lee were the best two players, but would like Holacek in for Thomas for more creativity. Callum Binner would like to see Osterfield given a rest against Forest Green Rovers and Holacek given the chance to drive us forward. Darren Stevens thinks the draws against Wimbledon and Gillingham have stabilised us and given us a platform to build on. Hello and welcome back to the latest episode of the Railway Men podcast. To help us go through the Gillingham draw, our panel today is Steve Hatton. Hello, Steve.
Hello, everybody.
Aaron Lewis. Hello, Aaron.
Hello, thanks for having me back on.
Not a problem. And Tom Mail. Hello, Tom.
Hi, everyone.
Now, guys, normally we start with teams, team selection, etc. I'm going to change up slightly this week. We've just heard the intro. I left 2 out. I left them out on purpose because I thought you'd be better off listening to them in the main podcast. Rich said that he would understand if we cancelled this week's podcast. And James said, good luck to the panel talking about that dross. So, good luck today, guys. We will go on to the team sheet. Aaron, I'll start with you. Following last week's performance, we saw Rowe come in for Kirk and Cooney come in for Zach Williams. I wasn't particularly surprised with either of those. I don't know how you were feeling.
The change for fullback kind of made a bit more, it felt a bit more obvious to me. Obviously, that was the direct replacement we made in the game last week. And any potential issue that you think Williams would have had, obviously made the bench and then made a cameo later on, so it can't have been too serious. But any sort of any potential injury there could have been like the reason why he was why that change would have been made. And then the change Rowe, I think it does make sense because I think I'm not quite a subscriber to Russ's theory that he's the best player that we've got, but I do quite like Aaron Rowe. I think he's a good player, and it was a sign that perhaps something needed to be changed up slightly, especially coming off the wings.
I'm glad you brought up Russ's hot take from a couple of weeks ago. This is definitely the week for the three of you to come up with your own hot takes for us to talk about, because I'm not sure you're going to beat Russ's, and is Aaron Rowe is the best footballer that we've got at the club. But yeah, if you have got any, then you know this week is the week to share them. Tom, are you? It's been a little while since we spoke to you. Are you a fan of what you've seen from Charlie Kirk at the moment, or are you sort of one of those that's a bit disappointed with what we're getting out of him?
I'm a bit disappointed. Yeah, he's
flitted in and out of games. I mean, yesterday clearly wasn't a game for him. I think the management have kind of learnt that feeding him into a away game with against a side packed full of giants isn't really the sort of game for Charlie. So I think it was the right decision yesterday, even though Rowe didn't exactly impose himself on the game either. In flashes, he's looked good with Rio overlapping. But again, there's the frustration that we've not really stuck with the regular formula at left back either. So he's not really had that opportunity to build a relationship with anybody. So it'd be nice to kind of see that develop a bit, because you could see flashes of it in the last couple of games that they were starting to build an understanding. And obviously we know that that's how Charlie was successful at his best in his previous stint with us. You can see why the Charlton fans weren't that enamoured with him. I mean, we know what he can do, so we forgive quite a lot of his inability to get stuck into tackles and sort of necessarily tracking back. Obviously, the Charlton fans hadn't seen that history to him, and you can see why he didn't ingratiate himself with the fan base. Charlton also moved him around a bit. They played him at a number 10 a few times, which we've not really done yet, which surprises me, because we've not really got anybody who's made that position their own. So, yeah, maybe if we do get in the playoffs, it might be worth trying out Charlie at number 10 and see how that goes.
Steve, let's go on to the game then. The first thing I think that I would sort of question or comment on is the conditions. It looked quite blustery in Kent. It didn't look like an ideal game for Crewe. And then the other thing was Gillingham came out with what was essentially a team of giants.
Yeah, it felt quite blustery walking to the ground. Couldn't quite feel it as much in our cosy stand. Unfortunately, we were denied the pleasure of the Brian Moore stand behind the goal. But yeah, it was a swirling kind of wind that probably similar to what they played in the home game last week. And yeah, it was basically spot the giant. The centre forward was a giant. The midfielder was a giant. The two centre halves are giants. I think, like Tom's just said, it wasn't a game for Charlie Kirk. It was never going to be pretty. And with the personnel they came out with, and in those first 10 minutes, it was pretty clear what their game plan was. And for 10 minutes, you know, it worked and it caused us a few problems.
Now, my next question is open to any one of the three of you. Talk us through the first half.
Can I suggest that the first 10 minutes belonged to Gillingham? And there was a lot of pressure down our left with the number 23, whose name escapes my mind, and Hutton.
Mahoney.
They looked quite dangerous, and they linked up quite well. And they actually managed to get the better of Rio on a few occasions. And that led to that header from the in-swinging cross that brought out a fantastic save from Booth, if I'm honest. I think it was a really, really impressive reaction save, because the header was pinged with a fair bit of power in his general direction, but still to thrust up a hand and tip that over, I thought was an excellent save. And then Rio, and I think Shiloh, I think Aaron Rowe helped him a little bit. Then Rio seemed to grow into the game and shut down the threat, because we're not used to seeing Rio getting beaten in those one-on-one duels this season, because he's such an improved player. So it's quite a shock to see people giving him that many problems. But I think he kind of settled down, and after those first 10 minutes, he was more assured, and he kind of shut down that threat. So it's 10 minutes Gillingham, and then we kind of took over, but it was still pretty painful.
Gills were playing practically four up front that first 10 minutes. So our two midfielders were dropping very deep, and we basically had no midfield. So it kind of looked like we'd managed to push up a bit and get the midfield more engaged in the game, which shut down that threat a bit. And at around 17 minutes, you know, I'd written, we'd started to show a few signs of attacking. There was some good interplay between Adebisi, Lee and Rowe down the left-hand side. And we were causing them problems by going around the outside. And then mysteriously we stopped. You know, we started kind of back into that kind of sloppy midfield play again. You know, Mickey was spraying diagonal balls out to the wings that were just being picked up by the wind and blowing out of play. So, you know, it's kind of just as it felt like we were starting to cause them some problems, and there was some sign of panic in their attack, in their defence, we stopped doing it, which is a bit frustrating.
I think like Tom said, those first 15, we couldn't concede. They had a big crowd. They were really up for it. We've let in early goals in the last two games. If that chance goes in that Booth saves, I think we're in a lot of trouble. And I think we had to shut them out for the first 15. That was crucial. But then, like Tom said, we did begin to get a bit of a foothold until we started pinging these ridiculous Hollywood passes from one side to the other. The win was just taken out of play.
For the like second week in a row, I think, for me, it looks like we're really struggling. And I know we kind of mentioned that it was windy there and it was windy at Gresty Road last week. But for the second week in a row, it looks like we're really struggling to like complete a 5 to 10 yard pass a lot of the time. And it was just very frustrating to watch at times that the ball would, you know, played out to, say, Cooney on the right-hand side and it would be 10 yards ahead of him instead of where he needs it at his feet. And it was just bizarre. And, like, I can't really fully understand it, why that seems to be going wrong, especially seeing as we've been pretty good at that kind of thing all season. But it just made it very frustrating to watch for me.
What I will say is that, I mean, there were some good stats on iFollow at half-time. So Gillingham failed to complete a successful dribble in that first half. Joe's keeper didn't make a save or a catch, but we won 100% of our tackles. So I thought that kind of told the story of the half. And to be fair, you know, they had two threats. They had set pieces and crosses into the box with the big fella Hawkins up front. You know, we aside from the first 10 minutes, we shut that down quite well. They had Johnny Williams down the left, who's a kind of tricky, small, skillful winger. Yeah, to be fair to Cooney, he had him in his pocket pretty much the whole game. So, you know, we nullified their threat very well. What we didn't do was really find a consistent way of hurting them with our attack.
I did like the battle between Johnny Williams and Ryan Kearney as two players who I can't believe are as young as they actually are. I couldn't believe Johnny Williams was only 30. He's got to be older than me, surely. He's been around forever.
There's some very interesting points there. I'm going to come back to a couple of them. But Tom, I would suggest if we're 8 minutes into the recording and you're telling us about goalkeeper catching stats, we are very much scraping the barrel this week in terms of action. One player I want to talk about, and then I'll come on to another point that Aaron's just made, was Steve, you mentioned Tom Booth. I thought he had a very good game. And I'm now pretty confident that we have a number one goalkeeper, whereas before I think it was between the two of them. We brought in Westwood for a little bit. Tom Booth is the number one, and I think he's getting better and better.
Yep, agreed. I agree with you. I thought he was it's not a particularly strong field, but he was definitely man of the match yesterday for me. One outstanding save, one run of the mill save when he tipped the header over in the second half. Sorry to give that spoiler away. Catching was good, kicking was good in difficult conditions. I think he was looking assured before he picked up that knock at Tranmere. And I think we do have now a definite number one, which is good. And a homegrown number one, which is even more impressive.
I think he did everything he needed to do, didn't he? Very well. Looked assured in the box and his handling. You know, difficult, windy conditions, high ball swirling around. I think he had a really, really good game.
Yeah, I kind of agree with everything we just said on that as well. I think it was one of those where I agree that he does seem to be improving as well as the games go on. And I feel like we're a little, maybe fortunate's not the right word, because if we were really fortunate, he wouldn't have got injured in the first place. But we're fortunate that his injury didn't keep him out for too long, and that he's not therefore missed too much development time in that.
I think the other person that stood out in that first half was Connor Thomas. He was my second choice for man of the match. I thought he had a terrific game. Again, kind of did everything that was asked of him, shut down their threat. By and large, kind of played the simple ball rather than the Hollywood ball and kept the midfield fluid.
I think, Tom, you're probably going to have a few people that disagree with that based on what I've just done for the intro. People saying he needs to be the one that comes out for Holacek and stuff. Do you think that what he does is all part of what makes Crewe tick and stopping them conceding, but it just doesn't get enough going forward? Is that what it is that Crewe fans aren't impressed with? It reminds me a little bit, and he's nowhere near the same level, but it reminds me a little bit of what Neil Saville used to do in the Championship days.
I think he's the next best thing we've got to Luke Offord in that role. I mean, I'd have Offord there any day of the week. Connor Thomas he's not a Crewe Academy player, is he? He's not going to play it through the lines as well as a Tabiner would in that position. But I think what he does give us in those games like yesterday, where you need that bit of grit and staying power, he kept us in the game, in my view. And again, he wasn't trying to overcomplicate it. You know, yes, his passing has been better, and the midfield in general didn't cover themselves in glory in terms of feeding the front three, but I thought he had a really good game.
I think, and obviously, Stu, I knew you would invoke the mighty Sorval. I could see that coming a mile off, and you signposted that one.
Any opportunity.
I thought you didn't disappoint. Any successful Crewe team that I have seen has had that steady Eddie who breaks up attacks, gets the ball, gives it to someone better. Sorval, obviously Ryan Wintle had a probably better range of passing. I'd even maybe put Dave Brammer in that kind of role as well. You need that player who sits there, who breaks it up, gives it to someone who could do something with it. If anyone is going to come out of that team for Holacek on yesterday's showing, it needs to be Osterfield, because I thought he was really poor yesterday, had a really disappointing game. I think Thomas plays a different role and he needs to maintain that role. And if Holacek comes in, someone else has to go.
Aaron, I'm going to go back to a point you made about 5 minutes ago now. Passing. Now, Neil, my brother, he messaged yesterday and said, is it a coincidence that we've got one academy player playing in the outfield, being Rio, and our passing not being quite where it is? Do you think that there is a correlation there, or are we being over optimistic on what the academy players do? Is there a reason that the passing wasn't there yesterday, and is that because the academy players aren't currently fit?
Possibly. I do think it's part of it. It'd be a bit weird to sort of, you know, we're not the only academy in the world that teaches players how to pass the ball, though. I think there is something to that, in terms of, obviously, that is like a focus of ours. It's one of those, it perhaps is why, or it perhaps is a contributing factor into why that the passing was so poor, but still, it's not unreasonable to expect players to still be able to do that, I think.
I think Rio was as guilty as anybody of poor passing yesterday. On the occasions he came into the middle, kept needlessly giving it away when there were a few good options on for him. I think it was the case we kept trying to kind of thread it through the middle when we were playing a team with such a solid core. We needed to be going down the outside, and for some inexplicable reason, we failed to do that for the most part.
Let's go on to the second half then. Steve, I would argue that the second half was better than the first half, but it wasn't a classic.
I think we had more control in the second half. We played a bit more football, but things fell apart at the final third. Now we began to get the ball down. We began to find some black or green, whatever bloody colour it is, shirts. But every time we got to the box, the final choice was poor. Take Rowe, for example. We had that little break and it opened up for him and the chance was there to shoot, but he cut back inside, put it back out again, and then the chance had gone. But I think we looked the better team. And if I'm honest, the changes and the change to three at the back seemed to take away that momentum. And I don't think the substitutions actually helped us. And the change of formation meant we weren't as much of a threat. I thought we were really growing in as a team and we looked like we might do something. And then there was a raft of subs and bookings, which kind of meant the momentum went out of the game. But I just think the switch to three at the back and the two up front didn't really work for me.
The only counterpoint I'd say to that is, I think our most dangerous moments in the second half seemed to come off Zach Williams' crossing. I thought he, we're talking like one or two opportunities really, because there was not a lot to talk about. But there was one or two chances where he put a ball into a really dangerous area, I thought. And like you say, nobody was there was the problem. We didn't have that sort of finishing product. I know there was one, it may have been Rio, actually. I might be misremembering the cross on that one, but there was the one that came into Nevitt that he looked like he was just about to poke home, and the lovely bit of keeping, actually, to be fair, because the keeper just sat down on it and kind of stopped it right there. But other than that, I think, like you say, that they were the sort of, that was a bit of a positive change, I felt.
I could see the rationale for the changes. Personally, I thought that we should have got somebody in up front next to Nevitt sooner. They had Nevitt pocketed very well all game, never really had a sniff, did he? On the rare occasions he did get the ball, he was shut down immediately. Sort of game maybe that a CBR coming on or a fitter Chris Long coming on sooner might have made more of a difference than going three at the back.
Yeah, let's talk about some subs then. Tom, there was one player that came on we've not seen for a little while. It's been sort of the talk of everyone in crew, Lewis Billington.
Yeah.
He's back.
Yeah,
he's back all along.
Yeah, he's back and he came on in midfield, which is a bit weird. Thought he did all right, though. He had sort of few decent runs with the ball and gave us a bit of composure that we were lacking. So, yeah, does he see Billow playing in a different place, maybe, than right back? I don't know. It probably would have been harsh on Cooney to have taken him off, I think. So, I mean, at least the mystery man is still in the frame.
I think I saw someone on social media mention this, but this is a classic Grady move to me, in that young lad comes in the team and then you just give him a breather. I remember David Vaughan, I mean, I'm going back a bit here, made a debut and then we didn't see him again for about a year. And it was a classic Dario thing of give him a taste, rest them, take them out, bring them back. And maybe Lee has learned from the maestro.
All of these stats are in my head at the moment because of the seasons that I keep writing, the story of the season reports that I keep writing. Yeah, you're right. David Vaughan played at home against Blackburn first day of the season, taken off at halftime, not seen again for the whole season. Dean Ashton made his debut at Gillingham, not seen in the first team for 2 months after that. So it is a Dario thing to get them in and then, you know, that's it. That's your taste. And then come back again when you're a little bit older, a little bit wiser. So possibly that's what Lee Bell has learned. Well, one of the things Lee Bell learned from Dario and the way. Someone that has been waiting for first team football since his loan from Preston, Aaron, Lewis Lee, he made his first start against Wimbledon last week. He obviously kept his place this week. What do you make of him?
It's a very good question, I think. When we first saw a few glimpses of him, because I think he come on at half time just before that first start, something like that, maybe. And he had sort of a longer sub appearance anyway. And I couldn't really figure out what he was there to do. He kind of chases balls down pretty well. And it's weird because, like, from the few highlights packages or whatever that I've seen of him when we signed him and stuff and people were circulating them online, it looked like he'd got a good range of passing, that was kind of his thing. And I don't know necessarily if we've got that from him just yet. But there is something there. I'm just not quite sure I've figured out what he is, and I'm not 100% sure anybody else has yet either.
Don't think he's a number 10. That I do think. I mean, I think he did a decent job yesterday. He was chasing down lost causes. There was an occasion where he won a corner absolutely nothing just through chasing their fullback down and forcing him into the error. But yeah, I agree. I think he's more a box-to-box midfielder than a number 10.
The other possibility is, and this kind of goes back to your point before, Tom, is perhaps could he be a bit more of the sort of deeper lying midfielder with an eye that he then, you know, can progress the ball upfield a little bit better?
Yeah. We haven't seen enough of him, really, I think, to form a view. But, yeah, he feels like the sort of player you'd want playing deeper than just behind the striker.
The one thing I would say if we're going to play him deeper is I have not changed my opinion that I gave about a month ago that he will be the next Kralik's player to get red carded in a game at some point. The way he throws his arms up at referees and throws himself into tackles, I think one of them is going to be one of them is going to fall foul of the referee at some point. Steve, I'm guessing because you've said you'd rather have Holacek in for Osterfield, you'd be happy to see Lee line up again on Monday against Forest Green.
Yeah, first time I've kind of, well, obviously he's not played that much. I was impressed by him. He was busy, and I think that moment that Tom mentioned when he won that corner, massive grin on his face. At crew fans when he won that, so he's clearly, I think he's enjoying now he's been in the team and that enthusiasm comes through. And with Aaron a bit, yes, he's got the enthusiasm, yes, he puts in the yards, but I'm not really sure what, you know, he's not a Joe White, he's not a Connor Thomas, is somewhere in between, really. He's that box to box player, and maybe you need a Holacek, you need a Joe White to be perhaps slipping those passes in the final third, because that's what we're missing at the moment. And it's not exactly a hot take. It's not going to rival Ross's hot take, but I'll put on the table that the player we are missing most out of everybody is Joe White. His ability to glide past a man, see a pass, play someone in, that is what we are presently crying out for. And hopefully Holacek can come in and provide that.
Alternatively, you could say that player is also Jack Powell. Similar sort of way that he could pick out a pass that, again, we seem to be missing a little bit.
Yeah, I think our key injuries in midfield are why perhaps that craft and that guile that you'd associate with a crew team are not there. Because, yeah, we're missing CBR, but I think all the key pivotal injuries have hit that midfield department. And that is why we're looking a bit bereft of creativity.
I'm going to change that slightly to a somewhat positive take and said, instead of Joe White, instead of Jack Powell, I'm going to say Joel Tabana, because that is someone that hopefully we should be back in time for the playoffs. So hopefully by the time we get to the playoffs, we'll have some creativity back in our side. Tom, you were going to say.
So here's a hot take for you. Mickey, do we think his levels have dropped? I mean, albeit from a very high level. Yeah, he gave away a very loose header in that kind of first 15 minutes yesterday that could have put us in real trouble. You know, he was spraying sort of balls out of the park all over the place. He's not the threat he once was from set pieces. I don't know whether teams have learned how to mark him better at corners. The long throws aren't working because we've got no height in the team anymore to convert them. He's still a fantastic player, and he certainly defended well yesterday, but he's not the attacking potent threat that he was of about 6 weeks ago.
Okay, here's a hot take for you. Have the long throw-ins ever worked? Have we ever scored from one?
The best moment we had with the long throw-ins was when we shaped up to do one and then ended up taking it short, and I think Jack Powell played in for the last minute equaliser that ended up going in very early on in the season. So it's the threat of them, but not actually the long throw-ins. I think that's what the key is.
I'm going to give you an answer to your question, Tom, so we don't go down the long throw-in tangent that we've just started. I think yes, in the short answer. I think yes, he has dropped off. I think the part of the problem was he was putting in such superhuman efforts of performances for a League Two player that none of us could believe we'd got this player to play for us in League Two. I think the goal scoring's dried up, essentially because he's being fouled every single time now. If you watch what opposition teams are doing to Mickey in the box, it's scandalous, and I can't believe not one referee has like called anyone out on that yet. But I think he's still a superb player. So I don't think he's performing quite at the level he was, but it would be insane to suggest that anyone could keep up the levels that he was playing at for the whole season in League Two, because, you know, at the time when he was playing so well, we were saying, what's he doing at Crewe? Why is he not playing higher than this? So, yeah, I think the short answer is yes, but there's a few caveats to add to that.
I was going to say as well, maybe perhaps we just don't know about it, but my assumption is maybe he's carrying a little injury. We've seen early on in the season, because we know he broke his foot, I believe, so he's quite willing to play on through this. Through any sort of kind of smaller injury like that. So perhaps there's something like that that's holding him back. That's kind of been my assumption when I'm watching him anyway.
Let's finish then, Steve, with a little summation of the performance and the result. It was 0-0. Nothing really happened. But Gillingham are going for playoffs. Crewe are trying. I mean, let's be honest. I think we are trying to cement our place in the playoffs now. I think the automatics have gone. It's a pretty good point at the end of the day, isn't it?
I think if Mansfield had done us a favour yesterday and managed to defeat Wrexham, I'd have left looking at that and thinking, maybe we could have got three. But in the end, with Wrexham winning, I can't see anyone catching those three. And that point became more crucial the more the game went on, to keep them beneath us, to keep that gap, and just to head towards securing that playoff spot. Because I do think, as everybody else seems to agree, I think the automatics are now not going to happen.
We haven't won there since 2014, apparently. I wouldn't suggest we ever looked anything particularly like it yesterday either, but I think that's a decent point against a difficult side in difficult conditions on a dry, bobbly pitch.
I think what says it all really was that we didn't actually notice that Hawkins had gone off, and suddenly we did a double take, and there was an even bigger lump playing centre forward for them, who arguably was a bit more of a threat, because we got the measure of Hawkins. I think Andrews, who came on, was a little bit more mobile, which, you know, is pretty clear because Hawkins is about as more mobile as wardrobe. But we didn't actually notice until suddenly someone, oh, there's another giant on.
I don't want to get sidetracked, but I think the first thing that he did was elbow Ryan Cooney in the face. So I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but that is the first thing that he did. Aaron, were you happy with a point at Gillingham? Is this going to be, you know, the sort of maybe not the performance, but the results that are going to needed to get us into this playoffs?
Yeah, very much. I think, especially, you know, given we're not on a great run of form as well at the minute, it's, as Tom pointed out, it's a tough place to go. It's a bit of one of those that we always seem to sort of struggle at. I'm very glad it was on iFollow and I didn't have to make the, like, 8-hour round journey or whatever it would have been. And, yeah, I think going into the weekend particularly, I was eyeing up 4 points to give a sort of brief preview on what I think for my prediction. So I think that realistically, that's a good point. It was a tough watch at times, but job done, I think, is the words you're kind of looking for, really.
Speaking on that then, Steve, if we just finish, one of the things I think has been really impressive this season is the amount of fans that have gone to the away games. I used to live in Woolwich, which is, you know, that Kent-London borderline, and even then, going to Gillingham felt like a long way away. So to have almost 300 crew fans there on Good Friday, you've got to take your hat off and say well done to everyone, haven't you?
Yeah, really, really impressive support for, again, not the best day of the year, really, travelling on a Good Friday with all the usual bank holiday chaos. Difficult journey. Not the most, can I say, salubrious of place to visit. Fair play, absolutely fair play to every single one of them who made that effort.
Okay, let's move on then to discuss the two games coming up this week. Tom, I'll start with you. Monday, we're at home, Forest Green Rovers. If ever a game was there for the taking to build some momentum going into the playoffs, it's a home game against 24th in the league. Yes?
You'd like to think so, wouldn't you? So as ever, we're not playing them at perhaps the best time we could have been. They went on a 17-game run without winning from October through till February. Sacked the manager. I think they're on the third manager of the season now, possibly even fourth. So they've got Steve Cottrell in charge now. He's steadied the ship a bit. They've had a few decent results. They beat Barrow away and drew with Wrexham at home, but they've also lost to an awful lot of teams that you would sort of think they might have been more competitive against. They've tightened up defensively to an extent, but they still seem to ship goals for fun. So I don't expect them to survive. And I would like to think we ought to be winning this game pretty comfortably.
This is the get right spot for me. I think winning the game, I don't want to say it's like must win in terms of like league position or points or anything like that, because I still think we hopefully get enough points in the other games as well. But I think it's a must win in terms of this is the chance for us to turn around the performances. This is the chance for us to kind of right the ship there. We can hopefully put out a good performance, and then that will then set us right for the rest of the season and beyond, hopefully.
Obviously, I want the points so we can secure our playoff spot, but I also want the points to consign this bunch of jokers to non-league so that they're gone forever. The fact that they've got Cotterill as manager just makes me despise them even more. Let's soundly thrash them and then dispense of them back to non-league where they belong. Yes, they're on my list.
I was going to say, this list of, what, 91 clubs out of the 92? Steve's I don't like list.
I reckon it's about 82, actually.
You were fairly complimentary is probably the wrong word, but you were fairly non-hate-filled when discussing Gillingham. So, you know, they must have done something to not annoy you.
I've been there so many times. It's like a second home because they've followed us around for years, haven't they? When we were good, they were good. And then when we were crap, they were crap. And they always get relegated with us. So I've been there so many times. I've almost got a bit of a soft spot for them, but I haven't got any sort of soft spot for Forest Green. They can just get lost.
You know, before, Steve, when you said that you knew Stu was gearing up for his Neil Sorval point, I knew you were gearing up for hate this team point.
Desperate to hear about the Accrington Stanley hate in about 5 minutes' time. But we'll stick with Forest Green for now. Steve, who's in your team? Who comes in? What do you change for Monday?
If he's fit, I'd give Osterfield a breather. He has been good for us. Don't get me wrong. I didn't think he was very good yesterday. He has been a good player. He is a young lad. He's played a lot of football because we've become quite reliant on him. So I'd swap Holacek for him. Other than that, I'd probably keep it as you were, really. I think it's a game where Holacek can thrive.
Tom, are you bringing Chris Long in?
Yeah. I think this is a game where I can see the opposition coming in and parking the bus. So we need the good creatives on for this one. I think Charlie Kirk, Holacek, Chris Long, throw the kitchen sink at them early doors, get a goal up, and then everybody can relax.
Full in agreement with Tom there. I think it's definitely one for Kirk for me. I think I'm a little bit higher perhaps on Charlie Kirk than most people. Hello, Mark. But yeah, I think it's a game that we could definitely take by the scruff of the neck with players like Chris Long and Charlie Kirk. So yeah, 100% in agreement.
Okay, Aaron, I'll stick with you. Score?
3-1.
Tom?
2-0.
And Steve?
2-0.
Lovely. That momentum-building victory from all of us. Okay, I spoke to Em to get the Forest Green perspective. Hi, Emma. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
So, first time with us. Can you just tell us a little bit about you and Forest Green Rovers, please?
Yeah, so I've been a Forest Green supporter since I was probably about 11 or 12. So going on far too many decades now. I grew up watching Wolves, actually. My dad, massive Wolves fan. And obviously living in the Stroud area, when Wolves weren't at home, we didn't go to away games. Dad would take us to see the local team. So that's how I got into watching Forest Green, really.
Okay. So can we start probably with a question you don't really want to answer? The game at Forest Green earlier in the season, September, it finished 4-1 to Crewe. What were your thoughts, the Forest Green fans' thoughts on the game, if you can remember that far back?
Just capitulated in the second half, I think. I can't remember a lot about it. A lot of our games, you know, haven't had a great season, and they do tend to blur all into one after a while. And it was quite a long time ago, so, and a lot has happened at the club.
Yeah, that was my next question. Can you sum up as succinctly as you can what's gone on in Forest Green season?
Oh, it's been tumultuous, I think would be a good word. Just no stability for the club at all. We've obviously on manager number three this season. And, you know, injury prone. We've had so many injuries this season. It's been absolutely ridiculous. I don't think anyone, Dave Horseman, Steve Cottrell, or even Troy Deeney have had a full squad. None of them have ever had a full lot of players to choose from. So that's got to be hard. You know, we've recently, don't know if you're aware, had changes at the top as well. So the board, you know, the director of football and all of that's been changed as well. So massive, massive changes at the club all season, really. So it's got to be hard for the players, I think.
So Steve Cottrell is now in charge. Is he the man that's going to save you, or is it a bit too late for this season now?
I think it's a bit too late. I think if we hadn't have gone down the Troy Deeney road and got Steve in at that point, I think we might have had a bit of a fighting chance. But if you look at our fixtures, the last few, you know, our last games are all against clubs fighting for promotion at the top of the league. You know, Sutton seemed to be now on a really good run of form after beating us a couple of weeks ago. So I think the nail's in our coffin, I'll be honest. But I think, you know, Steve will be the man to get us back up into the Football League. He can get his own team in, he can get his own, you know, readjust staff in, you know, behind the scenes if he needs to. I think if anyone's going to get us back up sooner rather than later, I think Steve's the man.
Okay. Last little questions then for you, Emma. What are your thoughts on the game on Monday? Is it, I mean, it sounds to me like you've already sort of accepted that this season is gone. Are you coming to Crewe with any possibility of getting a result? What's the thoughts?
Do you know what I said? I said to my friends yesterday, I said, I just want us to go out fighting. You know, if we're, pretty much we're down, you know, and mathematically we can stay up, but I think we're down. And I just want to see us fight, you know, and not go out, you know, really depressed and getting hammered every week. Hopefully yesterday was a bit of a blip. And at least we can go out fighting and show some good team spirit and, you know, give the fans something to cheer about, because we haven't had a lot the last two games.
So final question then, what's the score going to be on Monday?
Do you know what? I'll be happy with a draw. I know Steve Cotterill's won for clean sheets, so I don't really want a 0-0 draw, but, you know, a draw would be good.
All right, Emma, thank you so much for your time.
No worries. Thank you.
Aaron Accrington Stanley, they're in a bit of a turmoil at the moment. Manager sacked, assistant sacked, chairman seemingly having a beer and starting a Twitter rant and then deleting Twitter and then all sorts. If Forest Green was the momentum building game, then surely the Accrington Stanley game is the game we build on that momentum to go into the postseason.
Feels like it a little bit, yeah. They're, like you say, they're a bit all over the place with whatever's going on, management and otherwise. But the other thing is as well, like, they're probably getting to the point of the season now where technically post-Easter, what are they? They're not going to make the playoffs, are they? They're not going to go down. Maybe they're going to be a little bit on the beat, or am I just being a bit hopeful that they're just putting on the flip-flops already? I don't know. But yeah, I think it's another very winnable game and one that I would like us to come back with 3 points. And hopefully the half-time break is not as bad as it was there in the FA Cup a few years ago.
Steve, are you as confident as Aaron going into this one?
Yeah, I mean, they've probably got their crocs on. They're probably looking towards their summer holidays. The club's in turmoil, isn't it? But I've got memories. Accrington is often the scene of an utter disaster for us, isn't it? I remember the humiliating defeat in the rain under Dave Artell. And I've got vague memories of some sort of slaughtering of Steve Collis in goal years ago, maybe under Steve Holland, when we were embarrassed there on a Friday night. So it's not always a happy hunting ground. But they haven't got anything to play for. So you'd hope we can turn up and grab something from them. Incidentally, I haven't really got any feelings about Accrington whatsoever, neither positive nor negative. They just exist in my world.
Wow, two teams in one podcast that Steve doesn't hate. That's definitely a record. Tom, what are your thoughts going into the Stanley game next Saturday?
They're in terrible form. They've got one win in nine. They've only won at home twice this year. Obviously, they're without manager still. Owners lost the plot. They only seem to have one player who actually does anything. Their right winger is their top scorer and their leading assist maker. So he plays on the right wing. So if we can keep him quiet, then we've got half a chance. Rather like Steve, they seem to have slightly the Indian sign against us. I mean, the home match this year was the 3-3 game, which will go down in folklore as the Harvey Davis game. So I'm a little reticent because I've not got good memories of our form there. But nevertheless, they seem to be in free fall. Hopefully we've got some momentum behind us after the Forest Green game, and let's go out there and get the win.
All right, Tom, is it going to be a win?
Yes, I will go 1-0.
Steve?
I was reasonably confident till Tom reeled off all those stats, and now I think it'll be 1-1.
And Aaron?
I'm going to go with Tom. I want to say 1-0.
All right. Mostly, then, two victories this week, just Steve's draw away. But we'll take that. All right. Just a little bit, then, this week to finish off. Steve, I'll start with you. We had some contract news in the week. Owen Lunt signed an extension. We've not really seen the best of him this year. You know, it's been a season of injury, but that's broadly good news.
Yeah, he's become a bit of the forgotten man, really. I mean, there was a lot of talk about him pre-season because I seem to remember he started the friendly at Barnsley alongside a certain Charlie Colquitt, who seems to have disappeared from view recently as well. But yeah, a lot of talk about him, real promise, but then obviously injuries taking its toll. So hopefully he can bring himself back into our consciousness and give us that bit of guile and craft we need in that midfield when he's back with us. But yeah, good to see him getting tying down his future with us.
It was interesting, I think, to note that I think it was announced as a 1-year contract with the option of an extension. Quite like that move. Like Steve said, we've not really seen a lot from him this year. I think it's a back I think he's had that sounds obviously quite serious if it's kept him out for this long. So it's a case of, okay, well, let's see how he responds next season. If he does become an integral player, then we've got him for another year at least upon that. So yeah, I quite like that shrewd move by the management team.
You'd like to think he fills that hole that we've lost through Luke Offord, assuming Luke doesn't resign. Maybe he will. So yeah, let's hope we see him back firing next year. And you know, good to see us tying these academy products down to contracts, and hopefully there's no super low release clauses attached to this one.
Oh, those days are definitely over, Tom. Definitely, definitely gone those days. Now, those of us that were listening to Graham and Pete on the away commentary on iFollow, we did hear that Elliot Never is not far away, fingers crossed, hopefully. There's a few caveats in that sentence there. Steve, are you confident he'll stay? Are you hoping he'll stay? Is he an important part for you next season?
Yeah, I think he's... I'd love him to stay. I think he's become massively important this season. And we talk a lot about Rio being most improved player. I think there's a fair shout for Elliot Nevitt to be most improved player as well. He's durable. You know, you think of the amount of games he's played, and he's gone from being nowhere near a goal to being our most reliable goal threat. And he obviously loves it, and he's got that desire with that non-league background of breaking into league football quite late. He's clearly got that non-stop engine and that desire to constantly keep going. And I think he's one player who's definitely being improved by the quality of coaching that he's received at the club. And I imagine that's been quite significant in his development. So I'd love him to sign. I think he'd be an absolutely crucial asset for us next season, whatever league we end up in.
He's very level-headed as well, you know, in light of provocation from opposition centre halves. He doesn't get wound up and react, and yet he gives as good as he gets. So yeah, I mean, yeah, really, really important for us. Far and away our most reliable striker, if not our best striker. And I think we give him whatever he wants to stay.
Really quick mention then of our two competitions. We have got our last man standing has started again. I think 52 people entered. I'm not sure how many people have gone through because I haven't been sent the numbers yet by Tim. But well done if you did. Steve, I believe you were one of them.
Absolutely. My debut through to the second round.
And then we've also got our final of our fantasy football. We decided to do that on Monday for a home game. So we've got three finalists, Julie, Pete and Tim. Good luck to them. One of them, I'm sure, is going home with, I don't know, Regan Griffiths match-worn shirt or something along those lines. We'll see. We'll see what the prize is. But that will do us for this week. So, Aaron, Steve and Tom, thank you for coming on today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be back next week to discuss the Forest Green and Accrington Stanley games. Until then, goodbye. Bomb, 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 bomb